Actually, I get asked this question a lot. I don't know if people ask that of individuals doing American or European history. But it always, you know, if I tell somebody I'm doing African history, there's that moment of, oh, really?
Dr. Brett Schadel is an assistant professor of history, specifically African history, at Virginia Tech University. Recently, he visited the University of Arkansas campus to deliver the talk, Humiliation and the Colonial Condition, based upon research he's done in Kenya. During his time in Fayetteville, he came to KUAF to talk about what books he's written about the judicial system in Kenya, his current work, and his interest in African history as both a student and a teacher.
And it was really by accident that I first got interested in African history. I was an undergraduate history major at Northern Illinois. And I had taken a variety of some Latin American, some Asian history courses and kind of considered myself, you know, that I knew a fair amount of stuff about non-West areas. And there were some African students studying there. And they gave a panel presentation on things that Americans don't know about Africa. And I happened to be in the building. I just kind of went there just on a whim. And the more they started talking, the more I realized that I didn't know anything about Africa.
Which I think would put you with 99.8% of Americans.
Exactly.
Or Westerners, perhaps.
That's what I tell my students when they come in. They sometimes say, will I do okay in this class? I don't know anything about Africa. And I said, well, actually, that's good that you know that you don't know anything. One of the first things we do in my classes is ask them to say what comes to mind when they think of Africa. And it's animals, jungle, desert, those kind of things. So I tell them, just forget everything that you think you know, because whatever that you do know is probably wrong. So after I realized how little I actually did know, that was, I guess, my junior year in college, I just tried to do whatever reading I could on my own. We didn't actually have a historian of Africa there at that time. Hmm. So it was very much kind of me on my own trying to work through this stuff. And somehow Northwestern University decided that I was worth a risk to come and study Africa without ever having studied it in a formal way before.
I would think, of course, in the academic world, there's research, but there is also teaching. And I would think it would be exciting to teach classes that know virtually nothing about the subject.
Mm-hmm. It's very different what I have to teach. You know, somebody who does American history, the students have had it since grade school, presumably, and they know the outlines.
You have this checklist, Revolutionary, yep. Civil War, right?
Exactly. They know all the big events. They know some of the presidents. But I think that they have a better base, but I think then there's also a challenge of trying to get them to realize that the things they will learn in this American history class are not the same that they might have learned previously. When they come into my class, it's, on the one hand, I have to start in a very basic way, going over this is what African societies are like. This is kind of the broad expanse. Here's some of the important things you'll need to know. They walk out knowing, I think, like you say, more than 99% of the American public about that. So that is, it's a struggle, and sometimes going over some of the very basic things. But it is exciting knowing that they leave having a better appreciation for Africa.
So many of us, when we think Africa, I don't think we necessarily think of it as a continent, but more as a country, as if it is some sort of homogenous.
Right.
But you're going from South Africa to Kenya to Congo to Chad, mm-hmm. to Cairo. I mean,
yeah, and that is a challenge for teaching. I've shifted now because that is so difficult, especially, you know, if I do even 20th century history, it's such a big place and so diverse. So what I've actually changed from doing, trying to cover the whole continent, in some of my classes, I do like 3 weeks on Senegal and 3 weeks on Zimbabwe and 3 weeks on Congo, Great Lakes area, things like that, so that we can get into the specifics. And they figure out pretty quickly that the history of Senegal is very different from Zimbabwe. But there are enough parallels, things like colonialism and, post-colonial politics and economics, that they can see some of the patterns, but still appreciate the specific histories.
I imagine colonialism has its thumbprint all over Africa.
Yeah. Even you know, Liberia, which was officially never colonized, and Ethiopia, which was conquered by the Italians but not for an extended period, simply by virtue of existing during the period of colonialism, their politics were influenced. You know, Liberia was constantly trying to protect its borders from encroachment by the French and the British. It is interesting how, for example, in Kenya was colonized for 68 years. And so there were plenty of people at independence who had lived through the entire period, had come of age before it. And so there are some people who say, why, if in many places, it's been 50 years since Ghana, 54 years since Ghana got independence, almost as long as it was colonized to begin with. But the colonial period still changed many things in deep ways. There's still plenty of continuities. But there was, you know, in terms of economies being shifted from primarily subsistence to cash crops, monocrop culturing, you know, Kenya reliant on coffee and tea exports, so that it, in many ways, it changed significantly the lives, the way of living. And yet there are still some deep continuities from the pre-colonial period.
You mentioned Kenya. You concentrate on Kenya, and you concentrate on a specific time in Kenya in the book, Girl Cases, as this country and women in this country are and men are rethinking what it means to be married, how to get married. And it's in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us would, well, I was shocked a little bit to see that these sorts of questions were going on really at kind of the same time as they were all around the world.
Yeah, and it was actually a period. So, yeah, much of this starts in the 1930s and continues. And at the same time that women and men in this area called Gusiland in southwest Kenya were debating what it meant to be married, women in Great Britain, elite women there, were having debates about the status of women in the colonies. It was part of their own project to place themselves in the political discourse of the time. And kind of the white woman's burden, you know, mm-hmm. we need to protect mm-hmm. the colonized women. So there are these kind of at times overlapping, at times intersecting, but from very different bases. Women in Britain saying bride wealth is bad, it's the purchasing of women, while these women in Kenya are saying, no, bride wealth is essential. That's what it means to be married. But how the marriages are arranged, who gets to select husband and wife, was of much more importance.
You have all these court transcripts, these discussions. That's a boon to a historian.
It was amazing. They had really not been used before. And I was very lucky that in this area the court cases still existed. The archivist had come through and selected the cases that they thought were important and worth preserving in one of the provincial towns. Virtually all of the cases that I wanted were ones they decided they didn't need to save, or really they didn't have the room to store them. So one was in an old courthouse back in a corner. Another was in a courthouse that was being used. They were just kind of thrown around in a closet. Nobody was using them. It was just taking up space. Many had been partly or entirely eaten by bugs. Mm-hmm. I had to chase a goat out at one point because it was trying to eat some of the cases. But it was an amazing find. I don't think they probably were complete. So I'm sure some things were left off here and there. And it was also being translated from the local language, Ekugusi, into Swahili at the time of the court cases. So I know that I tried not to put too much emphasis on the language because I knew they had been translated. But the arguments were just fascinating, the way that the women and men were discussing marriage and how marriages should be made and the things that fathers spoke of, which was marriage is something made between two men, right? If I decide who my daughter should marry, and I make a deal with this other guy, that's what counts.
Who will be my son-in-law.
Be my son-in-law, right. And so they wouldn't, in their testimony, often would not mention the woman at all who had run away from the husband or had eloped with a young man. When the defendant, I should say in these cases, the women were never charged. The charge was against the man she was living with, who had not given bride wealth.
I see. The cohabitator.
Exactly.
As the court would have seen it.
Yes. And so the man would be brought to case either by the woman's official legal husband or by the father.
Sort of an alienation of affection?
In a sense, yeah. And it was based primarily then on this, I have paid bride wealth and this other man hasn't. Or the father said, she's living with him and he has not given me bride wealth. And so when these accused men and often the women came up to testify, the issue was entirely different. They might say, sure, I didn't pay bride wealth, but I want to. I'm willing to make this a marriage if I can. It was often because of poverty these men couldn't afford essentially the number of, and bride wealth was in cattle, given from the man's family to the new father-in-law. So many of these men and the women said, no, she chose me, or I chose this man. I wasn't carried off. I wasn't taken away. I did this on my own. And if we're allowed to stay together, you know, bride wealth will be exchanged as soon as we can.
This would be fascinating reading.
It really, really was. And just sitting there looking at these that hadn't been looked at, you know, in 50, 75 years, and seeing these words come out. And it's nothing that had really been written about in other histories. There's one significant history on Goose Island in the colonial period, and these issues didn't come up in his book. And it's just amazing to think the thousands of people that this was happening to in these really long, sometimes violent struggles over making marriage or breaking marriage that hadn't been, you know, written about, hadn't been pulled together. And it was fascinating stuff.
Dr. Brett Schadl is a member of the Virginia Tech Department of History faculty and was a recent guest lecturer at the University of Arkansas. During his time in Fayetteville, he came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio for that conversation. This is Ozarks at Large.